Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Thursday, the 3rd of June, recording at 7:34 p.m. British Standard Time. Now, you'll notice that I'm quite hoarse today, not due to any illness, fortunately, but because I'm a little bit talked out, having had the pleasure of conducting the first half of the chart seminar. That's my two-day workshop on behavioral technical analysis. And this is before an international audience, people coming in from all over the world, Canada, Pakistan, France, Germany, Sweden, Monaco, the USA, and of course from all across the UK, to mention just some of the countries from which delegates have arrived for TCS. And they're invariably a lively group, mainly subscribers, their friends and colleagues. And one of the things that I did was, in among the various polls that I take and many questions that I asked, I said, what's your overall perspective in terms of most of the people that you talk to, whether your colleagues, your clients, your friends? What's your impression? Are most investors and traders around the world today, are they confident about trends, or are they quite uncertain and nervous? And hardly a surprise that they said it was the latter. In other words, people were jittery overall. And that's certainly reflected in the type of market action that we've been seeing. We have choppy, whipsaw markets, which are dangerous. Because really the risk factor relative to potential reward has actually risen. To make money at an really acceptable risk, and which is preferably quite a low risk, we do need trend consistency, and we need some of those fine medium-term trends to run. By medium-term, I would say anything from, a few months, I would think, in terms of at least a few months. And instead, we have, as I say, very, very choppy whipsaw trends lasting a few weeks at best for the most part. And that's because people are all over the globe are uncertain about what's going to happen with the price of oil. They're uncertain about the prospects for global GDP growth, with China attempting to slow down its economy. They're a bit uncertain about the Fed's activity over the next few months. They know that stock markets are no longer anywhere near as cheap as they were a little over a year ago, generally. They also know that most of the big trends that we had seen last year and enjoyed have given way to these ranging phases, which, of course, do increase uncertainty overall. So to repeat the point, this is a higher risk environment for markets. I've been saying that really for some time, and it remains very much the case. What can we do? Well, trade less if you trade at all, and it's not a time to be taking too many big risks. And what we do, we want to try to do on a buy low, sell high basis. That's very often good advice, but when you have powerful trends, we can also buy high in the expectation of selling higher as trends reaffirm themselves. Today's rallies soon run into overhead resistance in most markets, and the sell-offs don't last all that long either. But I think peering beyond the short term, especially as this is the big picture long-term outlook for the four major asset classes that I cover, being stock markets, government bonds, currencies, and commodities, we need to also view this action, this current choppy, nervous action, in terms of the long-term picture. And once again, I will maintain that Wall Street is in a secular bear market, which I define as a period of gradually contracting PE ratios, which we usually get for a generation following the big secular bull markets, which very often end in bubbles. Those secular bull markets, and I would define those as a generation of expanding PE ratios, not on a year-by-year basis, but in large waves lasting several years that we tend to see within the secular trends lasting for approximately a generation. So my feeling is that Wall Street and most of the other markets around the world have completed a very good post-bear market phase, medium-term rally that commenced about March last year and ended earlier this year. And therefore, stock markets are going to be ranging sideways at best for the most part. Now, it's not all negative. They've still got low interest rates. They've still got the global economic recovery, which is intact in most countries overall, and that global economic recovery helps corporate profits for the most part. So it's by no means all negative. But of course, the good medium-term rally that I've referred to, or the technical bull within the secular bear, has discounted a very considerable amount of that good news. So what could help even more? What could push markets higher? Well, one would be polls clearly indicating that President Bush would win the next election. And that's not a political comment on my part, but markets don't like surprises. They don't like uncertainty. They prefer the devil they know to the one they don't. And that's why we do know that when incumbent parties are ahead in the polls prior to a presidential election, the annual returns on average and during an election year are far better than if the incumbent looks like he could, or the incumbent party looks like it could lose the presidential election. And I think that the general consensus is probably right that this is too close an election to call at this stage. In other words, President Bush might squeak through, but he could easily lose. And if the election were held tomorrow, I think it would be extremely, extremely close. So that adds to the uncertainty in terms of stock markets. Also, the interest rate cycle, we're moving into a more negative period as far as markets are concerned there. And the oil problem is, or high oil prices are a big problem for markets. And what could really lift markets? Well, I mentioned Bush moving into a significant lead in the polls. I think that's unlikely to occur, although you never know with politics. But it's unlikely to occur, I think, over the short term. The other one would be a significant drop in the price of oil. That would really be quite bullish. And while oil is experiencing, or has been experiencing, a consolidation of late, and could move a bit lower on that basis, I'd be very surprised to see a significant drop in the price of oil without the U.S. administration announcing that it was no longer adding to its strategic reserves of petroleum, let alone possibly mentioning that they were going to release some of that oil, which I don't think they would do. I don't think they would do that unless there was some sort of major event, such as a terrorist attack, which hopefully we don't have, which pushes oil prices higher still. So again, I feel that this is going to be a risky environment overall. It's one in which I really don't want to have a great deal of exposure to stock markets, and I've got plenty of hedge shorts, as you probably know. Those were reduced substantially a fortnight ago when my trailing stops were hit, fortunately, on positions in profit. I still have some, though. I've got a NASDAQ short position, which I put on just the or earlier in the week. And that's a little bit ahead at the moment, but it's sort of been in and out of profit. It's but currently it's a little bit ahead because the NASDAQ is down today. And I've got one in the S&P, which is going against me a bit at the moment. And I've got one in the UK stock market, which is about even, maybe slightly out of the money. And my feeling is that we're really unlikely to see much more than tests of the range highs at best for stock markets. And the most likely outlook is that we get sideways to lower sideways to lower trading for markets generally. And again, in terms of the big picture long-term outlook, the first 2 years of a new presidential term are historically the worst for stock markets, because that's the period when many of the excesses are corrected, or that there are attempts by the government and also the central bank, the Fed, to correct excesses in the economy created by the run-up to the presidential election. So I think we do really want to be careful. I think captive investors should buy good dividend streams. That means high yields that are preferably well covered. But I think it's also a time for not having too much in the way of substantial long-term positions. I would err on the side of high liquidity, and I do have a great deal of liquidity. I very often do, but it's higher than usual. I'm going to pause a moment, take off the headsets, and cough here. Excuse me. This tickling and rather for this tickling or rather raspy throat. Now, what else should I mention in equities? Again, I feel that the best long-term potential lies with the Asian markets. A lot of people agree with me on that, but that doesn't mean they're attractive in the short term. In the short term, they're underperforming. They're high beta. And so when markets are off the boil, as has been the case recently among equity trends, then some of those higher growth but more speculative, higher beta emerging markets very often underperform, as we have seen recently. But I think markets such as India, China, Thailand have and the whole Japan is market that's emerged from its long secular bear market. These have very considerable potential over the next 10 to 15 years, but few of them are going to resist a strong headwind from Wall Street, and I think the headwind from Wall Street is going to be increasing, certainly quite possibly over the next few months, and certainly in 2005-2006 in my view. And during that period of headwind from the U.S. markets, meaning that when the U.S. market is under pressure, that may well cause a number of the high beta, high growth markets to actually underperform Wall Street. That wouldn't be at all surprising. Okay, where are we today in stock markets? Well, Asia mostly on the downside. Japan got hit. I think it was up 100 points at one stage on the Nikkei and then closed down 200 points, nearly 2%. Hang Seng getting an even bigger decline, down 2.25% approximately. So quite nervous there. European markets, modest rallies in most of them. IBEX and Spanish IBEX and Milan MIB being the two exceptions, but very, very modest gains, just treading water here. And Wall Street was up when I got into the office a bit, but it's currently down now, 32 on the Dow, 5 on the S&P, 19 on the Standard & Poor's composite index. In currency markets, go on to bond markets. Here, in terms of government bond markets, I maintain that U.S. Treasury bonds and long-dated bonds and the Japanese JGBs and therefore most of the other markets around the world, which are fall within their sphere of influence, are in varying stages of top formation development as far as bond prices are concerned. And I maintain that the secular bull market in global bonds ended exactly a year ago, and to say that we are in a late stage development of the overall top formation. I'm playing this on the short side. I usually use a baby steps tactic on this, of lightly selling into the rallies for government bond futures. I currently have shorts in the JGBs, as you may recall, and I also opened a short recently in the U.S. Treasury bonds reopened to shorten the U.S. Treasury bonds, having taken profits on an earlier short position. I've taken advantage of this bounce that we've seen in recent weeks to reshort some positions there. And I'd be quite happy to add to that overall short position, but in this choppy environment, I'm not going to be too aggressive at any given stage. Now, why should bonds go into a secular bear market? Well, they had, of course, a huge bull market. The supply increase has been absolutely enormous. Governments have been pushing out paper in record quantities, and we have to ask ourselves, if they need to borrow that much, do we really want to lend that much to them? And that's an easy one for me to answer. No, I don't. I also think that people over discounted the deflation risk story, and central banks have certainly shown that they would much rather print money and err on the side of future inflation than suffer the consequences of deflation. It's easy to understand why they would choose that route, but that's not going to be so good for the long-term bonds. And a lot of people are still of the mindset that deflation is the threat, and that inflation can't move up because we don't have much pricing power and we don't have much wage pressure. And China and the rest of the developing world will make all the goods even more cheaply, and productivity increases and so on. Well, that's all in the market as far as I'm concerned, and I think people have overstated those arguments anyway. Of course, we can get prices rising, and prices are rising in great many different sectors of the economy, as you'll know when you pay the family bills. Okay, so secular bear trend for bond markets, that is negative for stock markets over the medium to longer term. Now, moving on to the currency markets. Here we don't get the once-in-a-generational moves because no government can withstand a strong currency beyond a period of a few years at most, and therefore they tend to increase the supply. And we've certainly seen plenty of that in the last few years, not least by the Bank of Japan and the U.S. Federal Reserve. But there is no country, as I've said so many times in the past, there's absolutely no country that wants to have a strong currency in this environment. And they make certain, or have been making certain, that they don't get that strong currency. And as I've said so many times before, additionally, that some countries are willing to do more to prevent that currency strength than others at any given time, and those that are doing less, such as the UK government and Bank of England at this stage, that will cause that particular country's currency to strengthen, as we've been seeing with sterling, which also has an interest rate advantage as well. But you know, we get sterling back up to 90 or more against the US dollar, and get it a little bit higher than current levels against the euro, and we're going to hear some complaints. Of course, there'll be efforts to talk it down. And if talking it down doesn't work, then the Chancellor of the Exchequer will probably be discussing with the Bank of England the merits of increasing the supply. But that's not something that's taking place to any great extent today. So, in terms of trends overall, I think probably the most important thing that's going on in currencies right now is that evidence continues to mount that the US dollar has completed what was a moderate medium-term rally, and that the dollar will be retesting its lows against a number of other currencies. I don't expect any dollar collapse. I don't think there's an economic case for a dollar collapse anytime soon, and I think that other central banks would resist that possibility, and the U.S. wouldn't want to see its currency collapse either. So if we say, and I know some people feel that the dollar is in the process of being rendered worthless by the Fed, Well, the Fed is certainly has certainly increased the supply rather dramatically. More money in circulation means less less purchasing power, and more inflation in the pipeline. But I think that it's also a case of which is least ugly in here, and there's no other currency that's going to be a shining safe haven in this environment. In my view, we're likely to have quite choppy trends, but within those choppy trends, as I say, I think the dollar will retest its lows on the US dollar index, and therefore against most currencies, the lows that we saw earlier this year. Now, the softness of a number of these currencies generally, and the resistance to appreciating currencies from central banks, is a bullish story for the supply and elasticity markets, which are mainly metals, but those are extremely volatile, as you know. Also petroleum, of course, I should mention. But again, these are very volatile markets, especially the metals are quite thin markets. Oil is a lot less volatile by comparison, because it's a much bigger more liquid market. Now, we have backwardations in a good many of these supply and elasticity markets, meaning that there are still shortages of nearby refined materials. A key variable here for these markets in terms of sentiment will be the course of the US dollar. So if I'm wrong in saying that the dollar's technical rally is over, and why might I be wrong in that? Well, because that dollar carry trade, there might still be some of that to be unwound. You can never be sure about that. But it would require a dollar rally, I think, to prevent many of these metals from ranging sideways and quite probably higher, despite the slowdown in China, despite the speculative shakeout and damage to bullish sentiment that we've seen in recent months. But this is a stress that this is also a somewhat dangerous market. I tend to be overweight in this sector in metals, but the trends are not as good as they were last year, and I'm relying mainly on metals where the backwardations are also working in my favor, in addition to rallies from depressed levels. I certainly am not going to pay up for any of these metals. And the moment they get into profit, where I have a little bit of breathing space, I tend to put in the money stop on them, as I have done with copper, which has actually got quite close to my stop in here today, which I've done. But copper, tin, and lead, I've got a bit more breathing space, particularly in lead, where I'm running a looser stop than I am in tin, because tin never got the big shakeout that the others saw, as you know. Now, I'm gonna stress that this is a dangerous environment here overall. I began to move into soybeans again, where I think I bought yesterday, where I'd had a remember I had a reasonable run in those earlier in the year, although it was sufficiently volatile so that I gave up a little bit more of the profit than I would have liked to. But I bought soybeans at any rate yesterday, and they had a big hit today. On the downside, I toyed with the idea of going in and picking up a little bit more. I'll probably wait till next week on this, because I'm not going to be able to deal in markets here tomorrow with my seminar activities. But I did buy a little bit more silver. This is a risky strategy. I've said my silver strategy is risky, and I'm a little annoyed with myself for taking as much of a risk as I have in that, although it hasn't come to grief. Actually, while I'm out of the money in my July contracts, and that's something that can change in the matter of a day. I was break even or slightly in the money very briefly earlier in the week, and at a stage last week. But silver's fallen back in the last couple of days. But you remember, I had booked some profits on some very cheap silver that I'd bought in my dollar account when I'd bought down to 555, and therefore I have been re-adding some of those positions on this setback, and I bought a little bit more in here today, paying five. I believe it was 577, yes, for the September contract, and that includes the spread bet costs. But I think that my better plays are likely to be in the metals where we have the backwardations. We do have the backwardation in soybeans still, so that's another reason why I will probably pick up more soybeans. That was an initial purchase, but I'll have to look to do that on Monday if I do it at all. Oil again, quite choppy. I mentioned the importance of this overall, and certainly a stronger oil price would be quite bearish for bonds and for stock markets in the short to medium term. And conversely, a bigger oil correction than I'm currently expecting would, well, to say that would be bullish. But if oil strengthens further in here, let alone breaks above that $42 a barrel level that it's backed away from several times, that would be, I'm talking about the spot crude oil NYME, currently 39.28. That's down 68 cents today, but over a dollar above the low on the day. One of the factors that increased, or rather caused oil to retreat today, were that OPEC finally announced a bigger attempt to, or bigger change in their allocation than people had expected. Quotas, I mean, really. But here's the headline on Bloomberg: OPEC to raise oil quotas by 2 million barrels, biggest increase since 1997. Well, most of that's already in the market, and a lot of people feel that this is just acknowledging the additional leakage that was already taking place. I'm not sure OPEC really has an extra shoe to drop, assuming they even wanted to drop an extra shoe, and I'm not convinced of that. They'll try to make as much money out of this oil market as they can, understandably. And I don't begrudge them that, obviously. It's their oil, and it's a practice we certainly see virtually everywhere else. You get as much as you can for your product, whatever it is, whether it's a commodity, or such a crucial commodity as oil, or whether it's anything else. But my point here really is that I'm not sure that there's a whole lot more that OPEC can actually do to get the price down. Part of the problem in this is, of course, the lack of refining capacity leading to the backwardations that we have actually seen. And I've already covered some sort of announcement, possibly from the regarding the U.S. Strategic Reserves. I gather that there's a lot of disagreement within the White House generally on this, with Bush and Cheney agreeing that they should hold off, not make any announcements. But I believe that Karl Rove and some of the other advisors, and possibly Colin Powell, favor announcing that there are not going to be any further purchases from the strategic reserves. And again, we can expect this to remain in the news really for quite some time. But suffice it to say, stronger oil prices would lead to would certainly lead to additional weakness in stocks and bonds. The factor that people most fear would be an attack on some sort of oil installation, or any threat to supplies. That would be very worrying. Also, oil did dip today because supplies in the U.S. increased more than actually forecast. That's a weekly figure that weekly figure that comes out. But as I say, oil, well, down on the day. And I see the crude NYMEs closed down 68 cents at 39.28, but it was as low as 38.15 at one stage, high on the day 40.80, 40.85. And I think that's pretty much it at this stage. Bottom line summary: it's a dangerous environment. Don't do too much in here. Unless you are very much someone who enjoys trading on a market timing basis, on a buy low, sell high basis. But my overall thought is that this is not a time to be taking a lot of risks, and I'm probably taking too many risks overall. There's perhaps a bit of hubris in so doing, which I should probably curtail a bit. It's never an asset in markets. Okay, I'm back to the chart seminar tomorrow, so this is my big picture long-term outlook audio for this week, and my next broadcast will be on Monday. Have a very good Friday in the markets and absolutely splendid weekend.